Our next case for this morning is Miller v. Gonzalez, 11-2906 and 12-2950. Mr. Fritz.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Is that high enough for you?
It'll keep going up further.
Now stop it. Perfect. May it please the Court. This Court has identified two key questions for this appeal. First, whether a jury could reasonably determine that Officer Gonzalez intentionally struck Julian Miller.
Where is the evidence of that?
Yeah. Well,
zero evidence, in my judgment.
Respectfully, we disagree. When the facts are viewed in Miller's favor, as they must on summary judgment, this is essentially a case of street justice. And there are four or five key facts that all point to the conclusion that Gonzalez intentionally struck Miller. First,
does it matter where he struck him, on the jaw, or is it your more general theory that Gonzalez, when he leaps over the fence, was aiming for Mr. Miller?
No, and I think that's a key point, that the district court really looked at this case the wrong way. It asked the wrong question. Rather than, the issue isn't whether Gonzalez bounded the fence and intended to strike Miller with precision with his knee. The question here is simply whether Gonzalez intended to hit Miller. And the fact,
Mr. Fravis, it seems that much of your argument depends on Miller's speculation about Gonzalez's state of mind. Is there really a factual dispute if Miller is just speculating about Gonzalez's intent?
Well, respectfully, he isn't speculating about his intent, that there is an abundance of circumstantial evidence in this case. Excuse me?
I don't see any evidence of intent to do anything except catch Miller.
Sure. Well, I'll step through the four or five key facts that really support this inference. First, we have an officer with a motive. Miller had disobeyed Gonzalez's order not to run, made him chase him for a block and a half. Two, he comes to a small enclosed space where Miller is laying prone on the ground, his hands spread out in front of him, seized at gunpoint by another officer.
And we have to assume at this moment, I take it, in your view, that A, there's enough light in this little yard that it's visible, that Gonzalez can see Miller on the ground, and B, there are not so many weeds and debris around this yard, again, that Gonzalez is able to see Miller.
Absolutely. You have to view the facts in the light most favorable to Miller, and he testified to both things. I would also add to that you have Gonzalez's own testimony. According to Gonzalez, he approaches the south side of the yard, and we know at this point that Miller is laying perpendicular to him in the yard. And
he's down on his face, by the way.
Down on his face. Well, he's laying on his I think on his right side. And
but you think the other guy intended to break his jaw when he's lying on his face.
I'm sorry?
I'd say your theory is that he intended to break his jaw while the man was lying on his face.
Our theory is that...
That seems implausible to me.
And again, I think that's really the wrong question here. The issue is whether he intended to jump on him.
And so even if he'd hit him in the middle of the back or on his legs or anything, it's your theory that the point is, did Gonzalez, in leaping over the fence, intend, as it were, to land on him? At that point, whatever consequence, the jaw, the back, the legs, the head, whatever is...
It's beside the point. As long as it's an intentional act that's taken in furtherance of an arrest.
Why would that be excessive force to land on top of him?
Well, it's excessive under the circumstances. This court has consistently held that it is unconstitutional to hit a suspect who's been restrained or subdued. And the facts in the light most favorable to Miller, he's
well, subdued. Exactly now, subdued. Hold on a minute. His arms are not yet secured.
But that's, that point, while certainly if he was handcuffed, it would be a stronger case, it is not a dispositive point here. There is no question that he is seized. It has been for 10 or 12 seconds. He's laying face down on the ground, motionless. And he's not moving. He's not doing anything.
Well, is he face down or is he on his side? And does that matter?
Well, let me clarify, because I think that there's a point. He's laying on his stomach, and his face is laying on its side, and so that he can see to the east fence right? And that's how he's able to see Gonzalez jump over. To your point earlier, Judge Wood, we have Gonzalez's testimony that he can see Stange kneeling in the yard, right?
He can see what? I didn't hear.
He can see the other officer who's kneeling behind Miller. And so if you believe Gonzalez, that he's standing at the south side of the fence, it's incredible to think that while he can see another officer who's at least 8 feet away, right, given the length of Miller's body and his position to the fence, well, he can see an officer 8 feet away kneeling in the ground. He can't see Miller laying there just 2 feet right in front of him.
Which brings me to Sting, by the way, because he's standing in a small enclosed area pointing his gun at Miller. What could he have possibly done to prevent injury to Miller in the second or two between when he realized Gonzalez was, you know, going to jump the fence and when Gonzalez lands on Miller? What could Stang have done?
Well, he could have warned him not to come over the fence. I mean, you have to set the scene here. I mean, the appellees are painting a picture that this is a bang-bang situation and everything's happening quickly, but there's another view of the facts here, and on summary judgment, we need to accept them as true, that doesn't support that. That we have a situation where, by Gonzalez's own admission, he approaches the yard, and he, according to Miller, he comes over the fence from the east side, not the south side. Now, both Miller and Stange go into the yard from the south side, and I think the inference here is fair to draw that if Gonzalez was simply in pursuit, right, he would go over the first part of the fence that he would come to, which is the south side of the fence. It's the street-facing side. Instead, what he does is he approaches the yard, and then he takes up a position on the east side of the fence, right? So we can infer from that both an intent to enter the yard and also infer from that that he doesn't want to come into the yard where he can see his fellow officer, where there's a risk that he's going to jump.
That's all speculation.
I would respectfully disagree. There's a difference between speculation and circumstantial evidence. And based on the circumstantial evidence, it's a fair inference to draw that Gonzalez had taken up a position relative in the yard where he could jump over the fence and land on Miller without hitting his fellow officer. And I think the most damning piece of evidence in this case is that after he jumps on Miller and Miller says, "You didn't have to break my jaw," Gonzalez says back to him, "I told you not to run."
I mean, I don't understand why that is significant.
Why that's significant? It's an admission of his intent.
If he hadn't run, none of this would have happened. That's all that statement says.
Well, that's a jury could certainly draw that conclusion.
You can interpret it to mean I wouldn't have deliberately broken your jaw, but that's not what he said.
Well, he said it is certainly capable and susceptible of that interpretation. However, on summary judgment, the inference needs to be drawn in our favor, in Miller's favor, and there is an inference here that through that statement, he's saying, "Look, I hit you because you ran." And it's clearly impermissible. That's an intent to punish. And you know, other circuits have held that that's the case, that that's a fair inference
to
draw.
Well, the question is, did he hit him deliberately, and did he hit him in such a way as to seriously injure him by breaking his jaw?
Sure.
And not that he just landed on top of him. I can't see what's criminal about that.
Well, I would say that even under the appellee's version of this case, right, they took the position on summary judgment that Gonzalez, quote, intended to restrain Miller. Okay, and they're maintaining that same basic argument on appeal. They said it's a volitional act to enter the yard to assist an officer. The fact that he didn't intend to break his jaw or cause an injury is irrelevant. The intent is there to exert force during the course of an arrest, and that's sufficient for the Fourth Amendment. Now, whether that force was
excessive...
When
you're chasing someone and they jump over a fence,
well,
you can't jump over the fence together?
Well, that's a different case. If you're pursuing a suspect and you're not trying to restrain them, right, that's a line that the case law seems to draw.
Well, you're saying, though, that he's already down and Stange is standing there pointing a gun at him. So rather than the hot pursuit scenario, you've got the already down suspect scenario.
That's correct.
And although I want to take you just for a second back to Stange, because you have the two theories. You've got the excessive force alleged against Gonzalez, and you have the failure to intervene alleged against Stange. And other than yelling out, hey, I've got things under control or something. It seems to me that there's very little Stange could have done to intervene.
Well, I won't disagree. It's a much closer case, I think, with respect to Officer Stange than it is with respect to Officer Gonzalez. However, when the facts are viewed in Miller's favor, we have an officer, Gonzalez, who approaches the yard, who takes up a position along the east fence.
And you're saying who takes a minute or a few seconds to do that, so he's time to think about what he's doing.
He has time to think about what he's doing. Stange, in his police report, says, I saw Gonzalez come running, and I saw him jump over the fence. And so this isn't a situation like the district court said, he was too busy doing something else. I mean, there's evidence in the record to suggest that Stange appreciated the fact that Gonzalez was coming into the yard.
Yeah, but look, he's standing there with his gun drawn, surely looking down.
I don't think that that's a fair inference to draw because of the fact that he puts in the police report that he saw Gonzalez come running and jump over the fence. And so his attention, at least through his peripheral vision or somehow, but he can at least see the other officer approaching, right? And the appellees make this argument. They say, well, it's common sense that another officer would jump into the yard to help his fellow officer. Well, that stands directly in tension with this idea that Stange had no idea that Gonzalez would come jumping over the fence. And at the very least, I think we have to appreciate the fact that this is a very, very small enclosed space. I mean, it's 6x8, 7x10. And when you put Miller laying face down on the ground and you have Stange behind him, there's very little other space. And so what you have is a situation where the officer simply comes running, jumps in, and, you know, I think at that point, Stange, if he appreciates Gonzalez coming around the fence, he has both an opportunity and the ability to say, wait, I've got him. You don't need to come in here. I see that I'm into my time for rebuttal.
All right. You may save the rest of your time, and we'll hear from Mr. Dunn.
May it please the court, Attorney Tony Dunn on behalf of the appellees, police officers Gonzalez and Stange. Officer Gonzalez approaches a suspect who admits that he flees. He chases him for a block and a half. At that point, Miller agrees that he jumps a 6 to 7 foot by 8 to 10 foot fenced in area, overgrown with knee-high weeds and brush.
But don't we need to take at least the appearance and the lighting according to what Miller says? Miller says there's lighting from a nearby light and that there's not that much of the brush. By the time he's lying down there, he's visible.
But even when you take the facts...
And you'd agree with those facts. For now, I mean, obviously.
If you agree with those facts, you still have a situation in which an officer is in a tiny fenced-in area, overgrown with knee-high brush and weeds, and he's pointing his gun at a suspect who had fled, and a suspect who admits that he still refused orders. He was told repeatedly, he agrees in the proposed findings of fact, that Officer Stange repeatedly shouted at him to put his hands behind his back and that he didn't.
Why aren't there material factual disputes about a number of things? One, whether Gonzalez could see Miller in the yard. Two, whether there was sufficient light or not. Three, whether Gonzalez fell or directly, you know, whether he fell directly off the fence or first landed on his feet and then dove into Miller. I mean, aren't these all disputed material facts?
If you can call them disputed facts, you can call them a difference in verbiage, but they're immaterial. I understand that the review here is de novo, but the district court judge's view on that, and I agree with it, is that even though there may be some differences, you can cherry pick these differences, but none of them would affect the outcome. None of them affect the fact that all Officer Gonzalez did was jump a fence to assist an officer.
Are you saying that whether he fell directly off the fence or first landed on his feet and then jumps on Gonzalez is not a material
fact? That was what the case was about, actually, because you can imagine Gonzalez jumping the fence to help Stange sure. in a way that avoids other people, or you can imagine Gonzalez hurtling himself directly down on top of Miller, and then the question is that degree of force
necessary.
Appropriate, or is it excessive under the circumstances? Sometimes force is necessary, and so it doesn't I'm not saying
sure.
what the answer to that question is, but those are two scenarios. One is he jumps in to help Stange and actually tries not to get anywhere near Miller, and the other is he vaults right onto Miller, as it happens, unfortunately, hits his head and breaks his jaw. But I mean, I think that's not the material question.
Sure. What Officer Gonzalez says happens is that he approaches the fence, he hears the shouting, he can see his officer knee high, he jumps the fence.
But he has two versions. One is that he slips on something, and the other is that he kind of falls over the he's not consistent.
I respectfully disagree that he has different versions of what happened. The affidavit versus the police report, the affidavit says, as I jumped the fence, I stumbled, I lost my balance falling forward.
But versus, that's why we hold trials.
But versus the police report that says, I jumped the fence, slipped on the wet grass as he's diving to help Officer Stange. I don't believe that either one of those is a material difference.
Well, but that's why we have juries and judges.
But Miller says there's circumstance. Miller says, here I was, it was a small yard, he aims for me. And then he says, right. That's what you get for running away from me.
Well, the comment that I told you not to run isn't said. I mean, this isn't the Baker versus City of Hamilton case where a cop's taking his asp and he hits an individual in the head and the knee and says, that's for running from me. If the statement is true.
It's not.
If it's said, Mr. Miller's refusing arrest, he had already said it once. He said, you landed on my jaw. No one alleges Officer Gonzalez said anything in response. He resists being handcuffed. They finally handcuff him, and they're walking him all the way back to the gas station where he had fled from when Miller says, you know, you didn't have to break my jaw, and then he responds, I told you not to run.
But couldn't a reasonable jury interpret the statement, I told you not to run, as either this is a natural consequence of running, or another way to look at it would be, I have punished you for running. Are you saying that no reasonable jury could find the latter?
In light of what happened, I do not believe that's a reasonable inference. This isn't the Baker versus City of Hamilton, where it's happening while he hits them. This isn't the case involving the prisoner litigation that's cited, where they said, we're going to fix you for what happened earlier, and then they presume to kick him while he's in his holding cell. I mean, this happens so far removed from the situation that I do not believe that's a reasonable inference.
Minutes, though. I mean, not hours or the next week or anything.
No, I agree that
they're just walking away.
It's as they're taking him back to the gas station where he had fled from.
And it's only a couple of blocks.
Correct.
Yeah.
If Gonzalez jumped over the fence and struck any part of Miller on the ground, is that a constitutional tort?
I don't believe that you can show, it's pure speculation that he landed on him purposefully or gratuitously. I guess the issue of whether or not it was excessive would get into that, but it is pure speculation based on the facts and circumstances of this case that he acted with any intention in landing on him. There's no evidence of that. And without that, you don't have a constitutional violation.
I mean, what evidence there is, and I suppose that's the issue, is circumstantial. We have the evidence that Miller is lying on the ground, that he's lying with his right cheek on the ground, his left side up, that his hands are up, that Stange is pointing a gun at him, that Gonzalez has the time to walk from one side of the yard to the other, that there's enough light to see where Miller is, and then Gonzalez vaulting, I guess it's not that high a fence on those two sides. The other sides were much higher, or one side was a garage, I guess. And so the question would be inferences from that situation, you know, that Gonzalez did, in fact, aim for Miller as opposed to just unfortunately accidentally hit him.
It's a chest-high fence on two sides, as Miller describes it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that there is any inferences that you can draw from those facts and circumstances reasonably draw to show intent.
Is there any evidence that Gonzalez could see Miller's face sticking out as he lay face down on the ground?
Well, Miller says there's some light shining from a nearby yard. Miller acknowledges that he's laying in knee-high weeds and brush. I don't know if it's in the record that Miller said that Officer Gonzalez saw his face. I don't think that Mr. Miller could testify to that.
Well, it seemed to me if he intended to break his jaw, he must have, as a preliminary to that, he must have seen his face. But that may not be the relevant question.
The only other comment I would make regarding Officer Stange is there is an abundance of case law that you have to have as an officer some reasonable opportunity to intervene and know that this is about to happen. There's simply no evidence that an officer who's kneeling, pointing his gun at a witness or at a suspect who acknowledges that he wasn't putting his hands behind his back for whatever reason, I believe his reason is he was afraid he was going to get shot, whatever it may be, no reasonable officer would take his eyes off of that individual and address the situation. That's even if he knew this was about to happen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Freibus?
Sure, just a few couple quick points. On the issue of intent, it really is, it's not a question of whether he intended to break his jaw, it's just a question of whether he was intending to restrain Miller. And again, we have their statement in their summary judgment brief that it is clear that he's intending to restrain Miller when he enters the yard, and I think that satisfies that question. I would also add
why is that a constitutional tort?
Well, the excessive, it's two different questions, right? If it's just a plain accident, and there are cases where, you know, somebody trips over a suspect, then it's an accident. You don't even get into the Fourth Amendment analysis. And so in order to have the excessive force analysis, we need to be satisfied that this is an intentional act. That's the first question the court posed. And here we have essentially their concession that it was an intent to restrain. And so then we ask, well, was it excessive? And each of the Graham factors in this case...
Yeah, it was an intent to restrain because he happened to land on top of this other guy?
No, it's an intent to restrain because he's jumping into the yard with the intent to restrain Miller in order to effectuate a seizure.
Why is that? What's bad? What's unconstitutional?
There's nothing unconstitutional about that. But it's not a constitutional violation until you have an intentional use of force. And so once you have the intentional use of force, and I think that's satisfied here, then you ask, is it excessive? And each of the three Graham factors compels a conclusion that it was. He was not an immediate threat. He was laying on the ground. He had been seized for 12 seconds at gunpoint. He was not actively resisting arrest, right?
He's running away.
No. At the time the force was used, he was on the ground motionless. And to the extent he wasn't putting his hands behind his back, that's a passive noncompliance that this court has consistently found does not justify the use of significant force, like jumping on a person. And then this idea that somehow that he had been...
Even though there's a fence between you and a person?
I'm sorry?
Even if there is
a fence
between you and the person?
Well, and I think this is a key point that I can hopefully clarify. You know, there seems to be some dispute about how high this fence is, right? Miller describes it as a chest-high fence, but we don't know if it's chest-high or chest-high. What we do know is that Miller was able to enter the yard by putting two hands on top of the fence and then leaping over it without his feet touching. We know that Gonzalez testified that he entered the yard by putting one hand and one foot on top of the fence. And so I think the conclusion here is that this is your garden variety, chain link, backyard fence. This isn't, you know, there's no feat of acrobatics that it takes for these officers to enter the yard. And so the third Graham factor also compels...
Well, it's presumably a barrier between the two men, isn't it?
Well, there is the barrier, but like I said, he can see Miller...
One way to deal with a barrier is to jump over.
Well, you can jump over the barrier, and you can either jump over the barrier in order to jump on the suspect, or you can enter the yard some other way in which you're going to avoid hitting the suspect. And I think, given his position, right, as he approaches the yard, He takes a position on the east fence. There's an inference of intent that he's going to enter the yard so as to be able to jump on the suspect while avoiding his fellow officer. Just two other quick points. I think this is exactly the Baker case. I mean, the factual circumstances are exactly on point. It's a Sixth Circuit case, but in terms of the analysis, it's exactly on point. And with respect to Stange, I think until a jury decides exactly how this injury occurred, right, how Gonzalez entered the yard, whether he intentionally wanted to punish Miller, I think it's premature to excuse Stange at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mr. Freibus, you have been here at our invitation, I believe, and we appreciate your help very much. And thanks as well to you, Mr. Dunn. We will take the case under advisement.